Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Rex Huerman.
He's the man that's also known as the Long Island serial killer or the Gilgo Beach murderer. All allegedly, he is innocent until proven guilty. But that's who people think he is, not just Rex Huerman, the family man, the architect from Massapequa Park who lived in kind of a hoarder house and collected massive amounts of weapons in his basement, and it turns out child porn, too. He, as many think, is the killer. His hair and his wife's hair. And his daughter's hair, found on the burlap sacks of several of the victims. The family not implicated at all. In fact, they've been pretty much cleared. We're going to go through some audio, some interview, and some video that they recently gave on a new Peacock documentary about the Gilgo Beach killer. And here, what was going on behind the scenes in that house with Asa Elrup and her children. Here to help us break down the behavior end of this, because it's a weird thing to watch, I'll tell you that much. Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Before we get into the clips, Robin, I know you just had a chance to break this down and go through it yesterday. After watching just overall 10,000-foot view, what was your reaction?
What a strange person I am. I loved it. Yeah. That's what made and here's why, you know, many, like most of the cases we cover, Tony, you know, we don't get a closer up view of the individuals involved. We have to rely on media. We have to rely on really short clips or documents or things like that to kind of assess, you know, the human beings involved here. And as my role inside the FBI was not to diagnose anyone with any kind of mental illness or anything like that, is really to do a deep dive to understand their patterns of life, to predict behavior and identify potential areas, to identify data and evidence for testimony and all these other things. And so that's what this was really good for. You know, instead of just seeing pictures of Asa and Rex and the daughter Victoria, you actually got to hear them, hear the voices, you know, so you can see congruency between nonverbals and verbals when she's speaking. And so, and then all these other things that I had questions about vacations and how long it took, and all these things got really answered for me by looking and observing her and how she viewed Rex, how this relationship started, that whole arc of them as a couple, which we still don't know a lot about what's happening behind closed doors. We got a much deeper look at it. And also, I had a lot of questions about the house.
Yeah.
That I got a more of a deep dive on. So it gave me more to work with, and it gave me a deeper understanding. So that's why I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it because of that deeper understanding.
And we've been trying to figure this out now for, I think, more than a year about what the heck was going on in that house. What was the dynamic? What was normalized to the point where if she had nothing to do with this, how did she know nothing about this? That's been the biggest question. And even for some of the adult kids, how did you not know? And they've been bombarded with those questions. And then we're going to go through and hear what some of those answers are directly from them in just a little bit. But before you saw it, I know we've talked about it several times here, but I mean, give me a recap. What were you feeling? What was your thoughts on Asa Ellerup and her level of knowledge of her husband before seeing her own words in this documentary?
You know, I thought she might have been, and she probably still is to a large extent, you know, rationalizing things she was observing to preserve her own mental status and not to conflict with her own viewpoint of the man she decided to spend her life with. You know, typical things that we think of when we think someone might have seen something but just wants to live in denial.
Mm-hmm.
Having watched this now and watched her and seeing how he did what he did, it gave me a different flavor. And so here's what I think. Again, pure conjecture on my point, but I've seen people like Rex before. Again, assuming, you know, innocent until proven guilty, but there's a lot of hard data on this for him. So believe it or not, the place where I've seen someone just like Rex before is a spy.
Okay.
A recruited spy. I worked with a few individuals that had made decisions long before they decided to cooperate with the United States government that they were going to do just that. I might even mention on other shows with you before.
Yeah.
But what they do is this. They create, and we all have this. We all, as human beings, and I know because I've done hundreds of investigations, both counterintelligence, espionage, and all that, everyone has secret place. That thing that we are ashamed of, some people have really, really small that they don't want to share with people that, you know, I kind of did this thing a couple years ago. I don't really want to share. Or I have this habit I'm really not proud of. You know, whatever it is, we all have it to varying degrees. And so everyone's got secret place. And so this typical spy that knows years and years in advance will create a secret place. They'll create a pattern of behavior that it can hide inside normal. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is this. We had one individual decided decades ago that he didn't want his family to grow up under Putin's oligarchy, horrible regime.
Mm-hmm.
And so what he did was to hide in plain sight, he carved out a periods of time every weekend that to everyone outside the family, he would always go shopping with his family, And he did his multiple tours overseas. He established a pattern of behavior of he would do this certain thing every Saturday with his wife and his children. Mm-hmm. And so the day he decided that he wants to now cooperate with the United States government, he needs to meet with the United States government. And how to best do that is to hide in plain sight. Instead of going shopping with his family at that point, he was now going to meet with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone else on the outside of that world, he was just doing what he did every single day.
Yeah.
And so he was able to hide in plain sight. So Rex then, you know, because when we're looking at that pattern of behavior, he is carving out time by saying, I'm working all these long hours.
Mm-hmm.
My family's going on vacation. He carved a persona for himself of what normal looked like of overworking. And so when I'm watching this and I'm listening to this, I says, if someone's working that hard as an architect inside New York City, what's his income level? He's got to have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the average income level, and again, they don't have details on him, but the average income level for someone of his tenure and time in New York that I did a search on is roughly $150,000 to $160,000.
Mm-hmm.
Not a huge amount of money if you're going to do that in New York. And so that's odd, but he's making money. His wife is also a nurse and she's making money. Where's all the money going if he's supposedly working so hard? So again, I'm seeing these incongruencies of behaviors. I'm seeing this carved out time that people will do when they're doing nefarious things. They will carve out time to stand in normal. And here's the key though, that allowed it to hide in plain sight that shifted after watching the show and watching Asa. She and I believe he chose her. I don't think it was a conscious thing, but I think there's an attraction there because he had this dark side of him. He didn't want to be seen. And the only way to hide it was to couple with someone who lacked curiosity.
Yeah.
When he gave her a line of I'm working too hard, I'm working long hours, I can't go on vacation because I'm working on these projects. These projects can only come about during summertime. She took it at face value.
Mm-hmm.
throughout their entire lives together. And so she lacked curiosity. And then superimpose that on Victoria and the other son, the stepson, mm-hmm. when the mother has a pattern behavior of no curiosity, and it's just assumed that this is what's going on because the mother believes it, the children will too. And so he was able to carve out these blocks of time and be opportunistic with that private time, that secret place, and hide in that plain sight. You know, choosing a parent's home to purchase, well, he had started committing murders prior to purchasing the home. And mm-hmm. and so he's able to then control the environment. It looks like that she was actually the one that planned the vacations and everything. But what better way to empower someone to with choice and allow them to feel a sense of control than to nudge them and say, hey, it looks like you're getting overworked. Why don't you plan a vacation? Then she feels like she's in control and she came up with the idea. So most, and again, pure conjecture, my thought pattern is the fact that he was able to placate himself through a lot of firearm shooting, you know, get that emotional rush, stalked his, as it looks like the evidence showing, stalked his victims and maybe even solicited his prostitutes until the point where he is able to nudge his family to get away on vacation so he could actually take it to that next level. But I think the real key that saved her and her knowledge, not necessarily plausible deniability or trying to rationalize what she saw, she just wasn't curious about anything that was going on.
True.
That curiosity is what kept that segregated in her mind, I think.
And I wonder about that curiosity, I wonder if that's how she always was, or if that's something that was kind of groomed into her through Rex of, we don't ask questions about Rex's, you know, little secret places. It would seem very normalized to them that Rex just had this place that nobody's allowed to go into in their own home.
I didn't get the sense of anything except adoration from her when she used that word, he's my hero, he mm-hmm. came to save us, you know, when he first took them in, when she went through that divorce and the husband left and he saved them from her perspective. And from that point on, and hey, there's a physical attraction there. She thought he was very handsome. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you look at the word she was using to describe Rex and her nonverbal behavior, again, I don't dissect people's nonverbals mm-hmm. with eyebrow flash and elevate. You know, I'm just looking for congruence. Was there congruence with the tempo here and congruence with the nonverbals here? I'm seeing nothing but congruence. So she emotionally very much felt the things she was saying about Rex. Mm-hmm. Very attracted to him, emotionally feeling like he saved him. And that was very consistent. Matter of fact, I even had a harder time thinking, you know, going back to the attorney, John Ray, claiming all these weird sexual things that they did in wife swapping earlier on in their career. I had a harder time believing that, believe it or not, after watching her and him. And I definitely think of it him.
Yeah.
Thinking she was included in it is what I have a hard time imagining.
I do too, unless she's one hell of a chameleon and changes her personality up depending on the odd. I don't know. I mean, based on the ASA we saw, can't really see that happening, but
she gives me the personality of that family, that security, that sense of comfort. That's why this home is so unchanged. It's mm-hmm. it's because there's a lot of sense of comfort for both of them being in that family home, of not changing things, of him being this. I mean, and also the endearing things he did mm-hmm. with woodcrafting and designing and building this elaborate dollhouse for his daughter Victoria.
Yeah,
you know, those are things that are very, very endearing to people that all of a sudden, I can't imagine behaviorally, if all of a sudden he says, hey, let's have this weird sexual encounter and do some wife swap, and she'd be like, yeehaw, family man. No. And kept calling him a good family man. I mean, again, you see, I don't get the sense from her, because again, limited, it was three episodes of this special, but I don't get the sense she had secret place.
Yeah.
I didn't see gaps of time where she's unobserved, claiming to be doing something for work or claiming to be mm-hmm. traveling without the kids. I mean, she is very, very kid oriented. She's not looking for time for herself. At least again, from the impression I got. So that's what I took out of that entire entire special.
Yeah, I got a lot of questions, and including some about that secret place, but let's watch some of the clips and we'll kind of get into some of those, because we're going to see the secret place. We're going to see all sorts of interesting things about what went on.
Creepy shit
but
there, boy.
Let's start out at the beginning. This is how she met Rex, because it kind of sets the scene for everything that goes on afterwards. This, again, is from the documentary
I
special.
I moved here in Peacock with Rex in November of 1995. No, that's my favorite. I met Rex when I was 18 years old. He was going to college. I was working at 7-Eleven. I was born in Iceland. My younger brother was adopted to an Icelandic family, and I was adopted to America. But because of that, I traveled a lot to Iceland with my family and Rex. He traveled a lot. He went on archaeological digs. He's the kind of guy you turn your head and you go take a look at, you know? He was tall, handsome, debonair young man. I love tall, dark, and handsome. That's me. And at that time, I was madly in love with the man. There's no doubt about that. But then I met my first husband and got married. But things did not go well at all. After my son Christopher was born, my ex-husband became somebody completely different. I was in the process of getting a divorce. Christopher's father, he wasn't very nice about it. He said to me, there's no way in the world he was going to be okay with me being happy with somebody else. Rex was the kind of person that you could call, even if you just wanted to talk, and that's it. We were friends. Everybody needs a friend. So Rex came with me one time to go pick up my son. Rex was standing there, and he heard what he said. Rex then says, okay, I'm not worried. Let's get a lawyer. Let's take him to court. And then he paid for the lawyer to take him to court. So fast forward, I got my divorce. There was no reason to hold back. You know what I mean? So Rex said to me, I've got a nice house. I mean, it's not big, not elaborate. How about you come and see if you'd like to stay there? I'm like, yes, I would love to. And then I found out I was pregnant with Rex's baby. And he said to me, well, how do you feel about marrying me? And I said, yes. There's a picture of me, and I'm looking up going, I finally got him. He's mine.
She still seems to have that same vigor about her of, he's mine. Everybody needs a friend, right? Lot to unpack there. I'm just going to go with you. What stood out to you?
Watching it again that time, there's one statement she said. There's a lot of statements in there. Yeah. You can obviously see. I mean, if you didn't know what you know now about him, you're like, wow, what a great guy.
Yeah, I mean, they look like a normal, like, if you look at what they are today and you look at those pictures from 1995, it looks like pretty much any normal couple's wedding, family photos.
It does. And here's something to kind of go to what I was saying about why he selected her. Again, was it a conscious choice because he wanted to use her to cover his horrible tracks? I just think it's intuitive. I think it was an attractiveness. And here's the attractiveness part. She said her ex-husband turned into somebody different.
Uh-huh.
She lacked curiosity through that entire life arc. So in other words, she was unable to see anything that's presented deeper than the surface.
Yeah.
I don't like using that word gullible because it kind of I don't like demeaning anyone or like victim blaming in this, but she doesn't have a deeper curiosity to understand why people have the actions they have. She takes people on their surface. I mean, it's a very endearing quality people have, you know. But at the same time, it made her susceptible to predators.
Yeah,
and the first husband was a predator from at least took advantage of her, dumped her, and left.
Yeah.
And she didn't see it coming, turned into a different person. And what happened the second time turned into a different person. She's completely and still doesn't believe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big part of that. I was wondering about that because she was able to recognize bad behavior at one point in time, it seems, but nothing beyond it really much until Rex comes in and says, "Well, let's do something about this." And who knows? I have no idea what her situation was. Maybe the idea of getting an attorney at the time was just unattainable, you know, financially.
7-Eleven.
Yeah. So there probably wasn't a lot of options. It's that X kind of had her where he wanted her in terms of control financially and all of that. Then Rex comes in as the savior. I got this house. You know, I can be this father. We already are, you know, we're friends, and this could turn into something. And I mean, it seems like if you have pure intent, okay, that's how some nice relationships begin, you know, coming out of some, you know, darkness and everybody kind of getting their stuff together and we're a happy family unit and it works. Mm-hmm. Unless it's Rex Heuermann and he already allegedly has killed somebody 3 years prior to you meeting. So there's a lot in there. But the no curiosity, there's just so many questions.
And she's also, you know, in nursing, you know, my daughter being a nurse too. No. I mean, these are people that are also, you know, biologically geared for empathy and taking mm-hmm. care of others and that whole embracing aspect of it. You know, a lot of nurses do nursing because they don't want to be doctors because it gets a little too clinical. They like mm-hmm. being close to patients.
Yeah.
They like taking care of others, you know, and that just emanates from her. You know, regarding the kids, the family aspect of things, traveling to Iceland for family. I mean, here's a woman, you know, that's working at 7-Eleven with not much money, yet it seems, you know, again, let's take that intuitive leap, you know, doing these trips to Iceland I can tell you, I've been there. It's the most expensive place I've ever been in the entire world.
Really?
Oh my God, it's horrendous because everything's got to be flown in.
Sure.
All they grow there is tomatoes, you know, in the thermals around the volcanoes. So there's not a lot, it's an expensive place to live, expensive place to visit. It's just very congruent with the empathy aspect of things, not curious, just taking care of others, being taken advantage of by some. You know, her ex-husband just didn't have the reps in hiding secret life that Rex had when they met. And so it was a great choice by him for what he wanted to do.
What do you make of the archaeological digs? That's kind of
one. Creepy, wasn't it? He's like, oh, where did this start from? Like, I mean, he's got odd habits, doesn't he?
He does.
He's got some odd. There's not a lot. I really try to research his parents, his upbringing, these types of things. Like my first thing I saw was he bought his parents' house. How many other serial killers that bought their parents' house, BTK did.
Yeah.
Because I was curious on that, because control that environment is so, it's not a huge amount. It has happened, but not a huge amount because that's the first thing that really struck me. Why would you buy your parents' house? What's going on there? And then also, no improvements to it. Very, very limited improvements. I mean, the place is run down. That's what sparked my curiosity. And I'm like, does he have money? Does he not use his money? Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at the health of Asa. He's definitely not paying health insurance for dental insurance or anything on her. I mean, you know, it's kind of sad. It's like, what are you doing with your time and money? Yeah. It's not the house. It's not healthcare. See what I mean? And she wasn't curious about it.
Well, and it was so normalized. So she didn't even realize just how strange it was that these somewhat basic things were not being taken care of, because she comes from a place where she was adopted to America, you know, that mm-hmm. so that whole, you know, familial connection is kind of different. So you get that she's led a kind of rough life growing up, abuse, rape. There was a lot that woman went through.
And there's no materialistic, you know, aspect mm-hmm. to her. It doesn't seem like what it is all to her is emotional. She keeps mm-hmm. going to that family, family, family. And he was providing family for her.
Yeah.
She had her children. She's close to her children. I mean, so all her need, you know, people balance the needs emotionally and physically and materialistically all very differently. And you can see her needs are being met emotionally, and that's what Rex was able to do.
Yeah.
And he also is not a very materialistic guy, because look at the wreck in which he lived. Mm-hmm. I mean, just crazy, especially in Long Island where they live. That's a little off.
I wonder about the house. We'll talk more about the house in a minute. Let's take a look at her showing off some of the house. This is her giving a tour of the gun room. This is very close to and part of Rex's lair, basically, in the basement that we've been hearing about. Locked off with a vault door, which I don't know. I mean, it's kind of odd in your basement. I've seen some people do it with gun rooms, but I don't know. It's a little odd. Let's take a look.
This is the steel door. It had a combination lock. It's this lever here. It's a very easy way to get out, so no one can get locked in here. Now, this is the room where he displayed his firearms collection.
So the famous gun room, when I sat there, I recall vividly that he said, in 30 years, you're the fourth person to ever be in this room. And I was like, wow. And that's when he showed me his collection. See, he started collecting rifles and all kinds of guns early on when he was 18. And it was an amazing collection.
There's nothing in this case that suggests that those guns were utilized in the commission of any crime.
A walk-in gun vault, that's one thing. But a secret room? I was like, oh my God.
According to a colleague of Rex Huerman's, he had a room specifically built in his basement that even his wife was not allowed to enter.
That's the secret room everybody talks about.
It's kind of a walk-in closet in the gun room that is actually right under the stairs.
He didn't want anybody to have access to it, the secret room, so nobody would know, not because he was hiding anything, but because he wanted to secure a safe in there.
And I actually didn't see what the inside of it actually looked like until after all this happened. I couldn't get in there myself.
All completely normal behavior, right? Normalized, but not normal.
That's what you grow up with. That's normal behavior. And also, from what I understand, too, it's also his childhood bedroom.
Yes, and that's a point I want to get to on this, because I think there's something to that. And I think it plays into the why the house has never been updated, why it still looks like 1965 in that.
Can't have contractors in there tearing shit apart.
No, you can't. But I wonder if there's a level of him finding peace in the familiarity of childhood, because essentially if he goes back into that basement, which was his childhood bedroom, and it's his kind of like safe, happy place, it makes you wonder what was going on in childhood with Rex too. What was going on in that basement? Was there something going on in that basement, or were those like happy, pure times before he got into this dark road? Or, was he always kind of doing some stuff down there that was kind of off, that he kept secret from the rest of society, but it still has a element of comfort because it is from childhood, and he was able to kind of weave in this darkness that he got into in adulthood into a safe place, and then it all kind of normalized it for him in life. Psychologically.
I think all of it, Tony. Yeah. I think these are all parts of a whole. I mean, so let's take a look, by comparison of current cases, and again, they're both innocent until proven guilty, but you look at a Brian Koberger, we don't have to place his name, but someone like him who's an accused serial killer, gives you a much different vibe. There's someone who's really, really with a broken brain, trying to seek out something, some sensations to give him a sense of fulfillment. I get a different feeling and a tenor from Huerman. And I just get the feeling that these are half of these behaviors he's doing were learned behaviors. I don't necessarily think he was like born doing a lot of this weird shit that typically pure broken brain people do. Mm-hmm. I think half of it was learned. I think maybe coping mechanisms he was having, because from what I understand, he was bullied pretty decently growing up. And yeah, safe places, psychological comfort from being in the bedroom that, you know, that you grew up in. And the other thing that struck me too was only four people to visit the gun vault and his gun collection. So here's what's kind of striking about that too. Years ago, there's a good book that was put out. I can't remember the author's name, but the book is called Snoop. Mm-hmm. And what Snoop talks about is what our stuff says about us. In other words, things we have on display. Like, for example, you know, behind me here, I have my books. I got my retired FBI creds. I got pictures of my kids. These things I have displayed for you, the world. I got my Marine Corps emblem here. I mean, they mean things to me, but these are things I project out to the world because they're what I want you to see as part of who I am to make a whole. And now here's the interesting thing. What he said was only four people have seen this gun vault. In other words, he didn't have this collection for his persona he's projecting to the world. This was his enjoyment for himself. Mm-hmm. That's a lot different than what people generally typically put out there. So he got his self-enjoyment from that gun collection. So that whole room and that whole complex and small downstairs, I call it a complex, but that mm-hmm. whole small secret place downstairs was purely for his psychological comfort. No one else's. That was his secret place to feel good about himself.
I want to read that book. Sam Gosling, by the way, is the author of Snoop. That looks really interesting because I have all sorts of stuff around here. You can't see it on camera. But yeah, I mean, I'd be really curious to learn about that. I have all sorts of I have a lot of childhood stuff over here on the wall. I have in my childhood, I was working in radio. I have mic flags. I have all sorts of radio stuff. I have Ghostbuster stuff. I have things that my grandfather gave me. Like I have a bowling a Jim Beam bowling pin where the top comes off. And it was, I remember him showing that to me as a child. Like, oh, this is so neat, a bowling pin. And it's actually when he was
all part of the arc, Tony. That's why, you know, one of the questions I asked you, you know, together, working together, you know, for everyone else listening, is like, hey, what was that inspiration all those years ago that helped Tony be who he is today?
Yeah.
And that's all these things that we hold on to are part of that arc.
The stuff tells a lot. Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
And then it's not just, it tells a lot, but it tells us what we want others to see it too. So what you'll see in Gosling's book is that you look at the, like if you go to someone's office or like this is my home office, where are the angles? Are they angled for me? Or are they angled for you?
Mm-hmm.
And that tells you what is this, what someone's trying to project, or is it something they're using for themselves? And so it's really, again, there's no right or wrong here.
Yeah.
It's just assessing part of understanding everyone. So all these things that Rex had was not about other people consuming what he had. It was all purely for him.
Because
this was not a show house. He didn't have what appears a show job.
Yeah.
Dollhouse, that dollhouse to me is really striking because he's a crafted, you know, a gifted craftsman, a woodworker. You know, he had habits and collections that I saw as really pretty different from what we've seen from others. Because one of the things I was also looking at is how was he able to placate himself in between kills? In between murders that he was using for his own gratification. I think that's why he had such extreme, what might, at least to me, seem more extreme collections and extreme hobbies, because he really needed that level in order to do that. You know, the soliciting prostitutes, that's an extreme behavior. Stalking prostitutes, extreme behavior. Yeah. Huge, massive gun collections, going to rifle ranges, extreme behaviors. So... Mm-hmm. Really interesting.
Yeah, and especially, and we'll take a listen to some of the clips of the daughter in just a little bit, because she's really conflicted about this. I mean, she had in her mind, a normal dad who would build a dollhouse for her, who would spend time with her, who would do things. And as she describes it, you can love him and you can hate him at the same time, because she's trying to reconcile childhood with what reality is. But we'll get to that part in a little bit. I want to focus a little bit more on Asa here and seeing what some of her reactions have been to this. Here's another one we're going to take a look at. This is her walking around the house shortly after the raid took place. And what she says at the end is quite poignant. Let's take a look.
When we got back home after they raided it, it was not recognizable. No beds, no clothes. Our bathroom sink was broken. They should have actually deemed our house uninhabitable.
Oh, look at this.
It was as if they were trying to leave us for dead.
They broke that,
didn't they?
They
just pulled this out of the wall.
They pulled it out of the wall. I think that's what that hole in the wall was from.
From? What is in here?
Garbage, nothing.
Well, something was in here, because it's not in here now.
The kids, they were crying themselves to sleep before we actually got into the house. We were all doing it. Fear, anxiety, guilt, all of those emotions are all going like a roller coaster, rolling, rolling, and rolling, and rolling. But we needed to come home. They had a lot of sentimental stuff in the house. And I still feel Rex is here.
There you go. That's the one. I still feel Rex is here, as if he's some sort of spiritual entity.
So her she is.
He's alive. He's in prison. But I still feel Rex is here in a real warm tone. Like I still, it's like if someone died, a loved one, a great person in your world died. And and to her, that kind of is what happened.
Yeah. I don't think she's ever, no matter how the trial goes, even found guilty. And she's even said in other clips too, you know, I don't think she's ever going to accept that he is the other person she didn't know.
Yeah.
She is so wrapped up in the image of him, and they were married a long time. They were together a long time. And that's a lot of reps of him being what she keeps describing as a family man, a family man, a family man, a family man. You know, from her perspective, what he was presenting her was someone that is always taking care of her, sending her on nice vacations, taking care of the kids, providing from her context. So just watching and listening to her throughout this, being presented with hard evidence, you know, of accusations and details, and she's not accepting any of it. And I don't think it's a survival mechanism. I just think she just doesn't believe it, because that's not who she knew.
Yeah, no, I agree. Let's see some more of Asa in action here.
I'm sorry. That planning document is so Dexter style. It's absolutely absurd.
Say if they really did happen down here, he really must have been like Superman.
For us not to have noticed anything ever. This used to be like his bedroom growing up. A lot of his, like, not only just gun stuff, but a lot of his childhood stuff, family heirlooms, were in this room. So for him to do that in this room, a little unrealistic, but I guess not impossible.
No, sorry. You want to know how I feel? They are picking, making assumptions for their narrative. I know that. I've known Rex since I was 18 years old. I know what this room was originally used for. And they're just allegations. He's never said to me, don't use my computer. He's never said, no, I'm not going to give you the password. I need that.
In other words, there's never anything off limits.
There's nothing off limits from Rex Huerman.
There's nothing off limits from Rex Huerman. So, you can't go in part of your house.
Tony, that was the key. When I saw her make that statement, you know why there's nothing off limits? Because she never asked.
Yeah, exactly. It's bio.
So when I saw that clip yesterday, that's when I said to me, that's it. That's the ticket. He didn't have to say anything's off limits because she never asked.
Yeah.
She was not curious at all. So when you can see all these aspects of his life that he actually segregated out and compartmentalized away from his daughter and his wife and his stepson, they weren't curious. And it's not because it was by intentionally, I don't want to know what's going on. He didn't arouse suspicion. Mm-hmm. And boy, suspicion is an interesting thing. Suspicion is when we have incongruencies in our words and our actions. His words and actions throughout his kids' entire lives, because they grew up with it. And since his wife normalized it from the beginning of their relationship, it's just the way it was.
Yeah.
Again, that they were all groomed into what his normal behavior was, and he was satisfying the family man persona. That's all she wanted. It's all she wanted in life was a family man. And so that's what he provided. And that's not going to blow her narrative. It's so easy to see now watching this again, if there's, again, edits can do a lot, you know, there might be other things that they edited out that might be incongruent, but if we're taking this as all there is to her and the daughter and everything, it's easy to see why there's no charges against them. They were just duped by I'll call him a lifestyle con artist, because he actually hid an entire lifestyle from his family under their noses. And it didn't take a lot. It just took a family not being curious.
Yeah, when you've been groomed not to ask questions, and you're not even thinking that you're omitting something, that you're not asking questions, you just don't do it because it's not something you would do because you already trust. That's how people like this get away with shit. It's so shocking to see it, 'cause it's like, how? But if you look at it and go, okay, I get it. I wonder the same about the case of the daughter, the Maddie Soto, Jen Soto, because we've looked at that. Like, how did the mom not know? The mom's
Stephen Stearns, right?
Yeah, the mom's literally saying to go sleep with her daughter, not like have sex with her daughter, but she was fine with this boyfriend sleeping in the same bed and thought nothing of it. And it's like, how? It's like this. I think it's a similar type story of how her mind worked, and she had previous trauma, and this guy kind of swooped in as the guy that was going to save the day. It's a similar type dynamic. If you look at Asa and the kids and the dynamic over there, not saying Rex was abusing his children. I don't think he was. It doesn't look like there's any signs of that, but they sure thought he was normal.
And Maddie Soto's mother that was diagnosed with a lot of mental illness as well that she was struggling with. I don't think Asa, I don't think she has been or will be.
Yeah.
But again, that grooming aspect of it, though, is what I agree with is congruent. They're groomed into what normal looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But also, and so actually just if you want to draw a parallel here, Maddie Soto's mother sided with her boyfriend over Maddie, her daughter.
Yes.
And everything. That would be interesting. Asa obviously is not, it'll be interesting what it does to the family dynamic, because the daughter is on the fence and thinks her dad did it. It'll be interesting to see what it does to the family dynamic there, because she's not going to go against Rex.
Let's take a look at that, because I think the daughter is dealing with some of that right now. Here's some of her observations on
maybe even with all this growing evidence against him, maybe there is some loyalty still to my dad and to my mom too. Like, listen, whether the world likes it or not, whether I like it or not, he's my dad. They can't take that away from me. I don't know what acceptance looks like. Acceptance to me is just it, I have to move on. I think, if he was guilty, it's gonna start to become like a love-hate relationship. This is my dad, and I love him as my dad. The hate is this other side of him that came out. And going forward, I'm not gonna interact with him the same way I would have if this never happened. Both the feelings, love and hate, can coexist.
She seems to have the best grip on this of all of the family members. I mean, she's got a whole life to live ahead of her. I mean, she's young. Mom is not. Let me ask you this in terms of people accepting the reality on reality's terms of what's going on around them with family members or somebody close to them. I wonder if there is a stat. Is it more typical to see younger people accept the reality of what's going on so they can move on with their lives versus someone who's Asa's age, who, she's lived her life for the most part. She's near retirement age by now. And I mean, you'd have to really kind of unearth your entire life and go, well, all that was not quite this what I thought it was. And then start anew at, I don't know how old she is, 60 something, 50 something. I don't know. But I wonder how much of that plays a role in terms of being able to accept and absorb and move forward with reality.
So I don't know the stats on it off the top of my head. What my thoughts on it are this, is that Asa made a choice, Victoria didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be anti your choices would invalidate your choices throughout, from the age of 18 till I think she's in her late 50s right now. I think Rex is, 57, 58, something like that. And they're roughly the same age.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a different thing psychologically that's going on. And it'll be interesting with Victoria too. So she's, as you can see how conflicted she is right now. Because she's taking in all the evidence. I mean, she's listening to the news and she's listening to all these things. But here's where I think you're going to see a shift in her is when if she goes and is in the courtroom and she sees the evidence, mm-hmm. she sees what was done, and it becomes more personal at that point.
Yeah.
It's not right now. It's more of a storyline right now. It's more, there's distance between it. It's just words to her that is being described and things. I don't know. I don't think she's seen anything.
Yeah.
She's just being told what there is. But when you actually got to touch it, taste it, feel it, up or close, the visceral response she has, I think is going to be a little more profound than what she has now. And I know you'll probably go to this, but I think BTK's daughter, when she came in to talk to her, gave a lot of clarity to what she's going through. Because, I mean, think about it. You are in the midst of a multiverse. I mean, just think of Marvel Comics. I mean, literally, you were living in one universe, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you were just told, no, there's two universes you're living in, and you're completely unaware that this other one's running parallel to you with your dad's living in too.
Yeah.
And it's a mind bend. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And so Asa's completely deciding to that other universe doesn't exist. And Victoria's sitting there saying, huh, I think that other universe does exist because the evidence seems pretty hard for it to exist. So how do I deal with that? You know, mm-hmm. what do I keep a toe here, keep a toe here? And so you see her wrestling with this. It's going to be a long road.
Yeah, and Akari has struggled with that. BTK's daughter, obviously, throughout her life, she wrote a book about it. She's been an advocate for other families who are struggling with a situation like this, because she's very much in the same sort of shoes that the daughter here is in right now.
Very similar.
It's a weird thing to think about. I was just in Wichita the other day. Me being me, it's the first time I've been back there for about a decade. Me and my daughter, we drove around Park City, showed her where BTK's house was, went into the grocery store where he used to work. And I used to go to that grocery store regularly. It was my grocery store. and I'm like, hey, did you know about, I was like giving her the fun facts of BTK. She's like, oh, really? Anyway. But
we need new hobbies, don't we?
Yeah. Where it's like, we're in Wichita. What should we do for the first thing? Let's go to find the BTK house or where it was. And let's go to the grocery store. Let's go to Leakers. There's the gas station Carrie worked at that she took. Yeah. But I digress. I want to take a look at this other clip here, because it's a really weird statement. It goes back to Asa, and it talks about not wanting to make Rex upset and what would make Rex upset. And the answer to that question is very bizarre. Let's take a look and we will talk about it on the other side.
Bye. I'm talking to him all the time, but he only has a certain amount of time to be able to make calls. So I can't get too comfortable talking to him about things that are going to hurt him.
What would hurt him? What are the things that hurt him?
Telling him that I love him, that will hurt him. The two of us were married for 27 years. We were 100% part of each other's lives. Does everybody really believe everything they hear?
Rex Heuermann is a demon.
Charged as a serial killer.
Do you really believe everything that's being said?
This man is a sexual sadist.
He enjoyed torturing his victims.
Well, we didn't buy it.
Telling him that I loved him, that would make him upset. What does that mean?
So here's my conjecture.
Yeah.
I think there's a decent probability that she's placing the empathy that she has on him, that he has, that he's just like her, that he, like, she sees him as a great family man. And I think that she thinks he sees himself as a good family man, and that because it would hurt her, you know, kind of like, you know, so let's take a look at the Delphi murders, Richard Allen real quick. Richard mm-hmm. Allen was devastated by what this was doing to his wife and his family, you know, being accused of murder, murdering these girls. Yeah. And I think that she thinks that it would, since it would hurt her to hear, you know, that he loves her if she's going to jail. I think it's the pain of the relationship. The pain of being emotionally separated is what would hurt her, was being emotionally separated from the family man. And so I think she's then reversing it and putting it on him that he wouldn't want to hear how much she loves him because it'll hurt him even more that they're separated. I think that was the really intent there. What was interesting also was you see how long of a pause she had too with the blocking of the eyes closed. Because she's really trying to, I don't think she understands what would hurt Rex. I think what she was thinking of was what would hurt her to hear.
Yeah.
And then place that on him. Because it would hurt her to hear him say how much he loves her, because it would just remind her that they're separated and might not ever see each other again.
Yeah.
So again, I think it was her superimposing what mm-hmm. she would feel on him.
That makes sense. Here's another clip of Asa talking about
this life. Is going to be the first time that I'm going to go to court and see Rex. Of course, I'm anxious. Everybody's going to be staring at me. That should do it. All of these girls that were found on Gilgo Beach, they were girls. They were somebody's daughter. They were somebody's sister. Nobody deserves what they got. But Rex was not seeing prostitutes. He's a family man. He didn't do this. I would need to hear it from Rex, face to face, that he killed these girls for me to believe it. My husband never kept me out of anything. That's why I'm going to the courthouse. That's why I want to see it for myself. It's important for me to know what he's going through. And I want to be a part of it.
There's a lot there. I don't even know where to begin. Go for it. What stood out to you?
She said I'd need to hear it from him. Yeah. She wouldn't believe it anyway.
That's why that was what my question was, and my mind went somewhere else. What would happen if she heard it from him? What if she just heard that he admitted that he was seeing prostitutes? Because that answers that question. That was a question I think a lot of us had. Was this kind of an open relationship, at least for him, where he could go do it, and she just kind of, you know, when he does it on the side, and I'm okay with it, or clearly not?
I don't think so. Yeah. I think so. Again, trying so hard to have deep empathy on this, like placing myself in her shoes. Like, I think the response would be, Rex, don't say that. That, you know, you don't have to say that to save me. Or I mean, I think she's going to place herself in the role. She would place herself in the role of thinking him sacrificing himself in some way to save her and the killed kids by admitting it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's no way I don't think in a million years she'd accept anything he'd say or anyone will say about him. As of today.
Yeah.
And she's not going. So again, here's what was interesting too. The other statement she made, I need to see what he's going through.
Yeah.
He's not going to court to learn the truth. She just wants to go see him to see what he's going through. Again, what's that? It's empathy, him, connection, comfort. I mean, it has nothing to do with facts and details. To her, again, from her own words, from her own behaviors, I don't think there's a fact or detail anyone could present, including Rex, that would say he did this. And anything he says is to protect her and the family because he's a family man. I mean, so you see how she's encapsulated that one statement, he's a family man, but it's going to rationalize every single behavior that's incongruent with what that her image of him is.
Yeah, I agree. I want to see, I don't know if we played
the allegation is that when you married Rex, he'd already committed a homicide. Had you had any knowledge of that, you wouldn't have married this man. And then chose to have children with him, correct?
No, there's no abnormal behavior that I ever actually noticed. And if there was any knowledge at all, some unusual behavior in that man, I would have walked out the door.
You wouldn't have brought your young son to live in an environment like that.
No.
That's an odd one. That's the one I've been trying to, I don't know which one that was. Her body language in there is really interesting. Where she's taught, when she's asking or answering that question of, there was no abnormal behavior, there, she just kind of goes on that list there, but she's not looking up at the camera, she's not looking at the guy, she's down. And then all of a sudden, her head pops up. I wouldn't have done, it reminds me of a Karen Reed clip where she like, what kind of a mad woman would I be? Or what kind of a killer would I be if I did that with the crazy eyes? It was that where it's like, I'm going to look down and then that to address what everybody else is saying is reality. What was your take?
Yeah, she didn't know what to say. Blocking, you know, from having to face it. And then mm-hmm. she thought she came up with a great statement to counter it.
Yeah.
I think she got excited the fact that she came up with something to say that was perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she's trying to say, I'm very smart. I can read people well. And I wouldn't have made that choice for my kids.
Yeah.
And that was her resume. I think she got excited by the fact that she came up with a
gotcha. Kind of. Yeah.
Like, yeah. I wouldn't have done that. He's not that guy. God, look, I'm smart. I would never bring my kids in that thing. Because again, if you approach everything you hear from her with that, again, that underlying understanding of she was never curious.
Mm-hmm.
It answers every question.
No, it really does. Here's how she
did. And so why did you bring, you know, your kids into this environment? Because you didn't ask the questions. What are you doing with your time? Why are you buying your parents' house? Why do you have a secret room? You know, I mean, why do you have a room that I can't go see? Why do you have this massive gun collection? What do you get at? You know, not that you have the gun collection. It's like a simple question. It's like, what enjoyment do you have from the gun collection?
Yeah.
You know, what enjoyment do you have by having your family house? What enjoyment do you have by not doing renovations or improvements? What enjoyment do you have? I mean, so again, always asking a what question to understand the person you've been married to for your entire life since 18 years old. You've been together, mm-hmm. you know, but that lack of curiosity allowed him to feel safe. This is why such a collaborative relationship. Yeah. They both felt very safe with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, mutually really beneficial. Did. I mean, it's a very symbiotic relationship. She got the family man from her procession and he got someone who didn't ask any questions whatsoever.
Yeah. And it was just all, it was like a perfect storm, I think,
it
for
really
her
was.
To be able
which,
to.
Which then to bring, you know, if you getting off of the human side of this, which brings in of how this has fallen apart for him. When you control that environment and you get placated by the comfort around you, you make a lot of mistakes over time. Mm-hmm. And I think when we've only seen a glimpse of the evidence of his missteps. And I think when the trial hits, we're going to see a lot of mistakes he made because he got very, very comfortable in that house of knowing, asking questions.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a spooky thing too about nobody asking questions is the fact that some of the bodies literally had Asa's hair on them, had the daughter's hair on them as DNA. I mean, I don't know what's going through her mind, going through Asa's mind, other than, is this just some big setup? They're framing my husband. I mean, she doesn't say those sort of things in this documentary at all, but you'd imagine there has to be something going through her mind of, well, what is the real reason? If it's not him, how did this happen? How did they find this stuff? How did this all work out? Is it all a setup? I mean, that's an easy one just to jump to if you don't have any explanations and you feel you don't need to come up with any. You just tell yourself that.
But you're actually being curious that she's not.
Then she may not even be wondering at all. It's just
she's not.
Yeah.
She's not wondering who did it. She just knows it's not him. That's all she's focused on. The family man doesn't do that.
Yeah.
I don't know who did it because it's all set up because Rex is not that guy. I mean, it's just, it keeps circling back to the simple thing. She's not curious. She's not asking questions and she doesn't, it's not that she doesn't even want to know. Because not wanting to know means you are even entertaining the thought.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she's entertaining that thought whatsoever. It's just not. It's just not cognizant for her. It's impossible in her mind, in her universe. Him doing this is completely impossible. And there's not one thing anyone can say, including him, that can change her mind.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, even at the end of the day, if he comes out and is like, yep, I did this, if he pulls a BTK at the end and is like, here's what I did, and he goes down the laundry list, I think she may keep telling herself, he's just saying that to preserve our family.
Yeah, you know, the one other area I was curious about, because he's been doing this supposedly for such a long time. Mm-hmm. I looked up the number of typical victims serial killers have, and it still ranges between 7 to 8 murders that mm-hmm. they commit is on the average for a serial killer.
Yeah.
I mean, there's outliers on that. But for the number of years he's been doing this, again, it didn't range outside of that 7 or 8, you know, when I'm trying to do these comparisons, but I would not be surprised if there's more that pop up. Now, I know they're doing a good deep dive to try to identify potentially more, because here's the challenge with it, is serial killers typically have a methodology for what they do, because that gives them that sexual and emotional satisfaction from reliving these things, the way to position bodies, you know, all the things they do. But because he assumingly was killing before he moved into his parents' house, mm-hmm. the way he did that is going to be different than when he moved into his parents' house. And then the fact that they're planning on moving down to North Carolina, he's visited all these other places, it's going to shift up how he did these murders. And so that fingerprint of what serial killers generally have is going to have shifted from every location. So I just don't get the sense from him that he... His gratification was coming, I think, in a different way than other serial killers, you know, because serial killers are positioned the bodies, they'll angle some of the bodies to face them, even though they're not physically there, because they can think about it, they can imagine it. And I actually looked up, as I remember last week, we were talking about this, him creating these detailed lists and checklists of things to do. Originally, I was thinking he did that so he could actually look at that to get that same satisfaction, but apparently he deleted those and destroyed those. Well, mm-hmm. he thought he did. So that wasn't it. So I keep thinking about where is he getting that satisfaction? How is he getting this need constantly met over a period of time? So I think there's a lot more we're going to see and be revealed here.
Yeah, I think we're at the very tip of the iceberg on this.
Yeah, case. A lot of big secret place there.
There's a lot coming soon from Rex, and it'll be interesting to see how they handle all of this and their profile in the next couple of years.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Cunahan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today.
See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a two-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.